Hello and welcome back to the Smart Life podcast, produced by Beacon Agency in association with the UK Smart Homes and Buildings Association. My name is Thomas Joy and we've got a fantastic episode today with Pete Gilbert from Romla, discussing everything from privacy in the smart home to how the gig economy is shaking up home installations, and also what millennials might be expecting from their devices in the future. Just before we get started, if you're enjoying this podcast, then make sure you leave us a review, whether or not you're on Apple or Spotify or any other provider. It really helps us find new listeners, and we quite enjoy the feedback too. So without further ado, let's get started with Season 2, Episode 6. Joining us today is Pete Gilbert, Commercial Director of Romla Tech UK. Now, Romla Tech represent a flexible and on-demand network of independent professionals, offering a diversified professional crowd to manage maintenance, repairs, and in and around the home installation across several markets, including smart home. By matching the demand for fast and effective solutions to business problems, their mission is to simultaneously empower businesses with profitability and emancipate people with flexibility. So thank you very much for joining us today, Pete.
Hi, thank you, Tom, for inviting me in.
You're very welcome. So we've got a lot to cover today, and of course the market's in a very interesting place in terms of everything that's happened in 2020, both with the economy and of course COVID. But when we talk about the smart home market, quite often people discuss, you know, smart home as one homogenous, market, this sort of all-encompassing term. But just like any other home-based market or any other market, there's actually quite a broad spectrum of consumers and what those consumers are expecting from, you know, smart home products and services. So obviously you sit a little bit outside the smart home market. How do you see, you know, smart home as a collective? And do you think that the market needs different approaches, you know, depending on how you, I suppose, segment it?
I guess the obvious and easy answer to that is yes. I probably get harassed by many marketeer friends when I sort of simplify this down into to sort of the three segments I see. The mass end of the market, where if smart home is to become where we'd all like it to be, where it needs to be, I think you've got the mass market in what I would call, you know, mass market in existing housing stock, which may seem an odd term, but for me, they're the people that are not actively seeking. So I think there's a belief, especially within the smart home bubble, that everybody is looking for everything and everybody wants, you know, I'll show my age here, the Jetsons home tomorrow. And that's just not the case. You know, my mum is quite happy to, you know, turn on the radio to find out what the weather's like or look out the window. She's happy to pull her own curtains and she's happy to turn her own lights on and off. You know, she's not actively looking for devices to do that for her. And I do think there's a lot of thinking within the smart home bubble that believes everybody is out looking for that. Mm. Hence, I think we see a lot of products being launched in the retail environment, which isn't necessarily the right environment for a lot of these products to be used, because that's only useful if people are in there looking for it. So I think you've got this mass of people that aren't really looking for it, and their conduit is probably something other than walking into an electronics retailer and seeing a device that they fancy, or somebody standing in a shop demonstrating something that hopefully they'll be interested in. I think what we see is more that conduit is they may be receiving a device through other means. That is, could be you get an Alexa or a Ring doorbell with a broadband deal, for example. Mm. Or your insurance company is offering you a security device for taking out an insurance policy to produce your premium. And I think for that market, that may be their first entry or their first trigger into smart home or connected home, whatever we want to call it. And from there, then it may build if they have an interest. So I've got an Alexa through signing up for a broadband deal, and then I see, or somebody mentions that they've got, I don't know, Philips Hue lighting, and I have an interest in that. And so I then start to build my interest, and I may start to then connect my home a little bit more. But I think that, you know, that's very different from believing that everybody's sitting there, you know, wanting it to happen within their home. I think we've then got a couple of, still got a couple of barriers to that in my mind, is you've just got the plethora of devices, plethora of brands, multi-platform, which just serve to confuse this element of the market, which, you know, which is a lot of them. So, you know, they don't know whether to have the, you know, which security device, which lighting device, you know, which thermostat, because there's so many out there giving them so many different messages. And there's no one point of contact, I think, at the moment. I don't believe there's no, there's one point of contact where they can get completely independent advice, let alone one independent service and installation solution.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think that, I believe that that's a barrier. Then you've got, I call it the privacy issue, because we can't get away from that.
Yes, no, you're right.
We can't
get
away from the privacy issue. And if I was to use, you know, my mum, you know, her friends, friends that I have, that's a huge issue to some people, not to others. I think to maybe millennials, it's far less of an issue. That's a bit of a sweeping statement, but I think, you know, for them, it's less. They've grown up with it. They've grown up with knowing that, you know, their data may be being made available. They're happy to just click through ads, as long as they can watch TikTok for 2 hours, TikTok for 2 hours a day, then they're happy, and they're not overly worried about it. And I'm not trying to trivialize it. I just think, you know, that may be, you know, there's maybe an element of a generational thing. And then if I look at that mass market, I think there's a whole connectivity, broadband restrictions, and some education to do there in terms of what's available, how many devices you can run, and just the availability of connectivity within individual homes can be a barrier. And I think there's a lot of people still that believe, and maybe because they're sold the belief by the companies selling you some of these services, that more devices can run well than is actually possible in most homes. So I think at that end of the market, there's a number of restrictions to becoming, let alone a connected home, and it's almost impossible to get to probably where we think smart home is.
Mm. That's a very interesting point. And you mentioned quite a few points that crop up quite regularly. Interoperability, infrastructure, and privacy. These seem to be sort of the hurdles that the market, you know, no matter where you sit in the market, but be it you an established brand or a startup, these are the three things that are really, I think, stopping both consumers buying, you know, and spending and investing in solutions, but also stopping the market, you know, pushing things that bit further, because we're all sort of aware that these issues exist, and yet somehow we can't quite work out who's responsible for dealing with those issues, I suppose, you know, whether or not it's government that need to legislate on privacy and data, or whether or not it's BT that have got to, you know, invest in infrastructure or things like that. So I think you make a really interesting point. And it's interesting that somebody that sits a little bit further outside the smart home bubble recognizes them so clearly as well.
My perspective of smart home, connected home, touches on some of those wider things. So because our service offers installation service, even pre-installation services, and we're sort of dealing with a spectrum of companies that touch on smart home around the peripherals as well. So we're dealing with fiber companies that are doing the builds. We're helping them with things like, you know, bringing down the cost of asset surveys, bringing down the cost of pre-installation, going into somebody's home, checking if everything's as it should be, informing the installation company the scenario that they're going to be walking into, whether that's a domestic home or whether that's a commercial property, in order that when they arrive, there's the right amount of people with the right amount of equipment at the right time and can install first time. Mm. So that means there's a saving for them in terms of cost, whether that's resource or, you know, or pound notes, or whether that's the consumer benefiting, because it's done first time. And then there's the connection between those two is that the consumer thinks better of the supplier because the job's done well and they're leaving the first time of that job completed. When you look at all of those, some of the problems are the same. And they're the same in terms of not so much necessarily the privacy, but certainly the broadband ability to run all your devices effectively. Mm. And sometimes you're not always given the best information by people trying to sell you. And the conversation goes along the lines of, well, there's two or three people in the household. We've got this device, we've got that device, we've got a couple of phones. I'm just a bit concerned that I'm going to pay all this extra money and it won't be able to handle it. Oh, it can handle this device. You could be streaming that and watching that. And your son could be playing on Xbox, you know, Xbox, don't worry. Jump forward 3 months when the engineer arrives because they're feeling that, you know, they actually think it's not been switched on because nothing's really changed. For the engineer to say, well, what do you expect? You've got four phones, you've got a Sonos, you've got this device, you've got an Alexa going, and you're trying to stream YouTube at the same time as your son's playing Xbox. And it's like, yes, but that's what I said. Mm. So they were sold that there was a solution to enable them to have all these wonderful devices that they wanted. And actually, the reality is not quite the same. So if we then project that onto, I want a truly smart home, and I want all these devices talking to each other, learning about me and having that connectivity, then there are some fundamentals, which are that house needs to be able to cope with that. And it's back exactly to what you said, take privacy out of it. Whose job is it to do that? Is it government to say, we want smart home, we want everybody to have access, therefore we need to fund the infrastructure? Do you just need more companies in the market offering more solutions and better solutions? And certainly, I think it's up to the industry to start working better together to have connected, grown-up conversations with consumers in order to win. Because I think there's too many disconnected conversations that only serve to confuse the consumers when they're looking for a solution.
When we talk about, from a marketing point of view, and especially when it comes to smart home marketing, quite often when we work with our clients and we say, well, look, the biggest challenge here is getting the consumer that has never bought a smart home device, that gulf between naught and one is huge. And then once they've got one device, they can start to see, okay, this is how it works. I get an idea of, you know, how this kind of works as a solution. Once they've kind of got the one, then their network of devices, you know, starts to grow. If they've got an Alexa, all of a sudden they go, oh, okay, maybe I can get some smart bulbs, or I can control my heating, or whatever it is. But actually, I don't think that there's much being said, you know, internally in the market of saying, well, what, even once you've got one device, getting more and growing that network then starts creating other problems, which, like you say, nobody's really looking to solve, whether or not that's network load or bandwidth or even internet speeds. We're always just saying, well, throw in as many devices as we can. But especially as we look at a mass market appeal where, you know, you're not necessarily working with consumers with, you know, unlimited budget for internet speeds and routers and whatever else, then actually I think it is a genuinely sort of serious consideration that we have to say, well, if people want a fully connected, intelligent and automated home, we need to strip down some of the basics here and say, you know, whether or not new homes are being built to standards that can support it, or, you know, what do we do with the existing housing stock that clearly can't at the moment?
No, I agree. And I think that's one of the problems. And I think, as you mentioned at the beginning of this, you know, 2020 has brought, its own interesting problems. I mean, we're still, you know, living through the pandemic, but I think, you know, things like, you know, doorbells and smart doorbells, you know, people are getting lots more packages delivered because they can't go out to the shops, especially the sort of vulnerable in society. And all of a sudden, you know, there's an uptake in that. And that, you know, that's potentially, we'll look back and would have been maybe a conduit to get people into smart home. You know, again, I'll go back to my mum, for example. My mum would have never used Zoom or Teams, you know, or Google Meets in her life. But all of a sudden, we're having weekly family calls and she's had to get herself a device to run it, you know, and to get herself up to speed. But with that, again, comes every one of those calls, she's the issue because her doubt, you know, her speed on her device means that, you know, the audio is terrible and the pitch is terrible and you just can't have a normal conversation where probably the rest of the family are a little bit, you know, are a little bit more sort of teched up in that department. So there's been a conduit to drive the need for devices, but absolutely what's available in her house is not able to meet that, and therefore she's going to have to do that, you know, at her cost. And you know, and that system is available. What isn't available, as you say, is to get us to truly smart home, I guess, where there's enough infrastructure for those devices to be able to start managing and enabling in your home in a way that they can't at the moment. And I guess I'll split that by sort of the second sector, if you like, which we were talking about in terms of how the market splits, which is adopters living in existing stock. People that are in normal housing stock, as you referred to it, but, you know, are really into the connectivity and the devices, and they do like to be, you know, woken up with their favorite piece of music and the curtains open and their favorite lighting and their favorite song playing, immediately telling you what the weather's like and how long it will take you to get to work, you know. And that's great, and that's sort of that second chunk of consumers, if you like, which they're actively looking. So you know, they are susceptible, and I guess a lot of companies are trying to market to them because there's a relatively quick return, because you're looking for something new in the market. You're looking for something to, you know, to solve a solution or to satisfy a need.
And I think that word solution is so key to really getting people where there is a lack of consumer education about, you know, why these devices exist. And I think that's a legacy thing, you know, looking back, you know, 10, 15, 20 plus years that some of these devices or, you know, the concept of a smart home has existed. Often products are marketed as essentially just a list of features, you know, as its hardware capabilities. Whereas actually the most effective sort of messaging and communication in terms of getting the consumer that maybe hasn't adopted any hardware before to say, actually, this is the difference it can make. This is the solution that it can provide. This is how it can help. But very interesting you mentioned, and it kind of leads us on to our next point quite nicely. The idea of how we live in our homes has been so altered in 2020. For a lot of us, you know, home is not just where we sleep and cook and watch TV. It's also where we work, where we socialize. And I think that actually, that concept of home, something that I really like that Romla says is about sort of emancipating people to kind of live and work on their own schedule. And the fact that, you know, you guys can offer the brands you work with a flexible, responsive, an agile workforce, you know, essentially in a market and economy that's changing quite quickly. Are you finding that brands and consumers are kind of looking for that level of service that they can fit around, you know, their life essentially?
There's two answers to that. One is the people that are signed up to our app, the Romlers, if you like. So people that are on our app and working on the tasks. And then obviously there's the businesses which are benefiting. So our app enables people just to have the app on their phone and see what work is available in their area. And we have two key areas in the UK. One is retail, and one is tech or home installation, what we're talking about today. So the retail one, you would, for example, be out and about in town, and it would let you know that there are tasks within your immediate vicinity, which could be, for example, there's a task to go into Boots, photograph some shampoo, answer some questions, send in the photograph and earn some money. Yeah, because you're already in a location and this is near you. What that does allow some freedom for people to work as they want, when they want, because they're not tied to a desk. They're not tied to an office. They can do it in their free time. They can do it at weekends. They can do it in their evenings. So it allows people to have some earning capacity that they wouldn't normally have. Equally, we have tasks which can be done from home, things like reviewing products. So what that enables people to do is to have an element of freedom. You know, and there's tasks for everybody. So that's great. In terms of the business, what that allows is to not be constrained by having a large fixed resource that you can't match with work. So obviously the old model is I need a lot of installations done. So I have my own workforce. So I have people that are trained with vans, with tools, and we send them out. That's great until your capacity is either massively higher or massively lower than the resource that you have available.
Yeah.
And then there's a loss. There's either a loss because you have people doing nothing, or there's a loss between getting the additional resource cost more than you'd budgeted for your fixed resource. So in that respect, what we do is we are taking that problem away from those businesses, and we are matching capacity with jobs available. And because we're doing it for a number of companies, for a number of industries on a scale, it means we're able to match people around the country to jobs when they're available.
Yeah.
So the Roamlers are either doing it full time, having complete freedom when they work and how they work, or they're able to earn additionally in their lunchtime, at weekends, in the evenings, just by using the skill set that they've already got. Because people that are doing in-home installations aren't the same people that are out shopping doing retail. I mean, they may cross over, but in the installations, these are professional people. They're all DBS checked. They're going into people's homes. They're fully qualified. They're even, you know, fully trained for the tasks by the companies that they're going in to do. But they don't work for us full time. They're able to dip in and dip out. And as you said, that gives them that total flexibility. But what it does for a company is it means they don't have to sit on that fixed resource. Mm-hmm. So this week, for example, I was talking to an electric vehicle charging supplying company. So their issue is they're suddenly going to have a big increase in volume. They know it's a growing market, it's a growing sector, so they're going to have a big increase in volume over the next 12 months. They don't know which weeks, which months, how. What they don't want to do is employ a big fixed resource, of which some of that is going to be sitting around, you know, not employed effectively for maybe 50% of the time.
Yeah.
So by outsourcing to a model like ours, they can actually just buy the resource. It's on demand when they need it. So if they have a week when it's zero, their cost is zero. And that's the real benefit of our model.
It's really interesting that you mentioned this kind of element of service. We see a lot of retailers introduce sort of premium sort of subscription elements, even if they are what we would now consider traditional retail. For example, AO.com have, you know, you can, you know, pay to have things installed or serviced or delivered. Similarly with Amazon, you have Amazon Prime. So you're finding that it makes more sense now for your businesses that you work with, that they have this kind of ongoing element of maintenance and repair and installation, that there is actually a consumer demand. They're saying, well, do you know what? My life is busy and I am very happy to pay for this to be looked after for me.
Definitely. There's a definite move from do it yourself to do it for me, which is exactly what you're saying. There's also, again, you know, clear sectors in the market for what you're talking about. And we talk about them actually as there's a certain sector of the market that cannot physically install a washing machine.
Mm.
Yeah. So there's an element where there's vulnerable customers in the marketplace that need help. Then there's can't be trusted, which I'll put myself into that camp, which is My better half would much rather pay somebody to do it than trust me to do it.
Yep, you and me both. You and me both there.
You know, that shelf is only going to fall down. That washing machine will leak with it. So actually to pay, you know, e.g. £50 to have it installed properly is nothing compared to the aggro that it's going to be afterwards. And in fact, I would rather pay the £50 than have the aggro that's going to cause afterwards.
Yeah.
And then there's the can't be bothered. You know, as you've said, life's too short. You know, I'd rather be, you know, out playing with my kids. I'd rather be running. I'd rather be cycling. I don't want to spend, even down to, I don't want to spend that horrendous 45 minutes tuning my new smart TV.
Yeah.
Right. I just want somebody to come in and take that pain away. But it's also back to the previous point about the capacity. Sometimes we work for our clients where we are 100% of their solution, but other times we're part of the solution. Sometimes we're just managing those changes in capacity for them. But it's all down to, because of this growing demand, as I say, moving from a DIY environment to definitely a do-it-for-me.
Yeah, and it's really, I was having a conversation with some friends over the weekend, actually, and we were discussing there's a sort of a generational difference in what success looks like. We sort of theorized that, you know, previous generations, you know, for example, my parents' generation, success was financial. It didn't matter, you know, how many hours you worked, no matter how long you were at the home, at the office working, you know, it was a financial thing. It was the money in the bank at the end of the day. Whereas I feel personally, being of the millennial generation who's going through what, their third or fourth recession of their lifetimes, what success looks like to this, you know, this generation and the next generation is being time bridge. Is having the time to spend time with your friends, to spend time with your family, to do what interests you, for example. So I think that demand, as you say, for the people that actually, it's not that they can't be bothered, it's just that actually their time is almost too important to them to spend it doing something that they know that there is a solution for, I guess. Even if, you know, a lot of these devices could be plug and play, it still represents just too much of a faff to have to deal with.
Exactly. And long may it continue.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Continue. But I think it's twofold. I mean, we joke about it. There is definitely that move. But also, there's just more devices.
Mm.
Yeah. And so, you know, even if you go back, you know, 10 years ago, you would expect somebody to come and install a washing machine, for example. Yeah, you wouldn't expect everybody to do that themselves. Some people are able to do it themselves, some people aren't. But there wasn't the volume of devices now that you can purchase, which require or may require some help, you know. And then if you think, actually, if you're in the vulnerable can't category, or can't be trusted category, then that's just a growing number of devices that people need support with, both within smart home and non-smart home. But you know, certainly within the realms of smart home, and that's going to be, you know, exponential over the next 10 years. So, you know, these services will be required to help people, because the flip side of it, as we've touched on, companies don't want big fixed resources anymore that they can't, that aren't flexible. And so services like ours offer that on-demand and flexibility. And whether they outsource completely or whether they use them to, you know, to manage that capacity, then it's definitely within the, you know, within the wider gig economy, then it's definitely a growing service that will be required.
Yeah. And I suppose as well for the businesses that you work with, where consumer loyalty is so crucial, almost where you have an ecosystem with so many disparate products, to be able to make sure that you're, you know, not reducing or diminishing consumer trust by bad installations or from bad experiences through setup, you're able to ensure that the consumers have the best possible experience with smart home devices, especially because, you know, the concept, you know, or the idea of, you know, mass market adoption of smart home is relatively new. You know, you're able to ensure that people can continue to trust these brands because they are installed and configured properly.
Yes, and it goes slightly further than that, actually. We find that it can increase because our model, for example, offers sort of a 12-7 service. So 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. We sort of give the power back to the consumer to book it through our online portal when they want it. Mm. So there's no, you need to be in, Tom, 9 to 5 next Wednesday, because that's when we'll come and fit your smart home device. You go onto our portal and go, hey, do you know what? I'd like it 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon because that suits me. So what you actually is, you enhance the consumer experience as well, because yes, it's fitted properly by qualified people who are DBS checked and, you know, et cetera, as you would expect if you're the brand who's buying Roamler's service. But as a consumer, what you enjoy is all of a sudden you're not having to take time off work to wait in for it to be installed, because it's actually being installed exactly when you want it. So it works for everybody. And so you do really get a win-win-win.
So I think that brings us really nicely in terms of looking at the future and in terms of what that means for retail, but also kind of what it means for the overall customer experience, not just in terms of purchase and installation and maintenance and so on, but also what they expect from their devices, you know, where they are expecting potentially a full home solution and whether or not that influences the devices that they're going to be purchasing. So I guess, Pete, you know, in terms of how you see the market progressing and developing, you know, how do you think consumer attitudes towards their technology is going to change in terms of what they expect from it?
That's a great question, actually, because you're as I alluded to earlier, so you're speaking to somebody from the, you know, watching the Jetsons and Star Trek as a child generation. And therefore, my expectation is that we're 20 or 30 years past my hover car dream already. Mm. And it's just not happened yet. Maybe Hanna-Barbera and Gene Roddenberry didn't quite understand the restrictions of internet. When they were making those programs and building the expectation of a young Pete. And there is, you know, and I joke about it, but I think, you know, if you go back 20 years, there was an expectation that we would be further forward than we are. So I do think that's a fact. That's not to say, obviously, that technology has not advanced amazingly. And I guess if I use my Star Trek reference, you know, the communicator that Captain Kirk used is probably could do far less back in the 1960s than my mobile phone could do now. So, you know, it can't stun people or kill people yet, which is which is a blessing. And equally in things, you know, people, you know, sitting in their cartoon homes, you know, talking to people on massive TV screens, you know, we're doing that now and people are doing that every day with, you know, certainly in the pandemic environment. So certain things are there. But I think in general, it feels like it's not quite there yet for some of the reasons that we talked about earlier. I think, as you alluded to, in terms of new generations wanting to be time rich and having, you know, an expectation and a positive expectation, I think that spills over into devices as well. My belief is they don't just want a device to do what the device does. They want a device to do something that they want it to do. And some, I believe, are there, but I think that's the future. And it might be an individual device, or it may be that the devices are able to do it now, but actually put together in the right way gives you the more human experience. And a couple of examples of that, I guess. And to me, it's a difference. My terminology is, it is a difference between a device, a connected home, and a smart home. Because for me, in the future, a smart home, smart devices are learning and doing something which is of benefit to you and what you want and what you bought the device for, rather than you bought the device to do what the device wants to do, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
So I think there's some good examples. So I was speaking to somebody the other day, they've just bought an electric car and they've got a home charger and it's linked to Octopus electricity. Mm-hmm. Because of the Octopus service that they're on, it's a variable rate. So I think the way that Octopus works is they've got a wholesale rate, which maybe changes every half an hour. Yeah. Mm. So they've got a smart charger. What that smart charger does is you put it on at 8 o'clock at night. It knows you're not going to need it till 7 o'clock the next morning. And it will only charge it at the time when the electricity is cheapest. Now, for me, that's a good example of getting to smart. And a non-smart device is an electric vehicle charger, which just does what it's supposed to do. Is I've bought an electric vehicle charger, I plug it in, and it charges my car. What I want from it is, can you charge my car when it's most economical for me to save money? So that moves a device from being just a device to a smart device. And if you take that into the home more and you apply that same logic to, actually, I don't use my fridge probably from 8 o'clock in the evening till 7 o'clock in the morning. So a smart device would reduce the amount of power to my fridge during those hours and push it to something that I did need. And actually, over time, it's learning my habits and changing them and then benefiting me as the user. And I think that's very different to where we are at the moment. So I had a communication the other day from my supplier. We've got this, you know, have a smart meter. So again, everyone likes to use the word smart. Have this smart meter. This smart meter tells you how you're using your electricity, and therefore you'll be able to make changes and save yourself money. Not really, because I'm pretty consistent in my habits. So what it's telling me is what I already know. A truly smart meter, as I've just said, would learn when I'm using electricity in certain devices and push that usage elsewhere, or push it back to the grid and give me some money back for when I do need it. And they do exist. So I'm not saying that technology is there, but I think there's two examples. It's not openly available to the masses at the moment. And if we really want to truly get into smart home territory, then we have to find ways for it to be available to the masses. And it's an example of, when I speak to millennials, that's their expectation of a smart device, not just something that you plug in and does what it wants to do.
I think that is a perfect example of like you say, people almost, once they have these devices and once they're even, you know, set up and configured and installed, I then don't want to have to spend the time to go back and reconfigure it because my patterns have changed, or because, you know, however it was set up originally now isn't working for me. And interestingly, some of my devices, and I think this is a really paramount thing here for the smart home market, is that I don't even want to have to think about needing to change that, being, you know, reactive to changes in my environment, to changes in my routine. A perfect example of how I think it works so well, and how I hadn't even noticed that it was being done until I, you know, thought about it, was that I use a certain supermarket that has an app where I can scan my loyalty card and pay all in one app. All I need is a QR code. And I hadn't realized, of course, I only ever use that app when I'm in one location, which is this particular supermarket. And I realized, you know, now I was unlocking my phone and, you know, going to search for the app, it was now coming up in my recommended apps to open. And it was obviously identifying where I was in terms of GPS. The apps that I used when I were there was essentially music, notes, and this particular loyalty app. And I suddenly thought, blimey, that's smart. That's saving me time. That's recognizing my routine using, you know, location data and app history data, and providing me with a solution, even if it only ever saved me 1 or 2 seconds or a couple of key taps, you know, to find the app. But then I look at, you know, my smart home devices and the smart speakers that I use and whatever else, all of the routines that I have, you know, whether or not what time I want the lights turning on, what time, you know, practically all of it has to be custom configured. The only kind of couple of things at the moment that I'm using that are, I suppose, smart in inverted commas, is that some of my, I think our garden lights are scheduled to come on 20 minutes before sunset. So that is a sort of a dynamic bit of automation. But everything else is literally custom configured with individual, you know, say at this time or when I say this, do this. And whilst, of course, it's smart in that, you know, it's all internet connected and everything, it doesn't learn. And it certainly doesn't do that through any automation. And I feel as though that's this key component missing, that actually, whilst it is offering a solution, it's not, as a millennial, it's certainly not a full solution that I'm looking for.
It may not be everybody's definition of smart home. Mm. So I'm absolutely coming at this from a, you know, a Pete Gilbert point of reference of as a person of a certain age with a certain an expectation when he was seven that's not there yet, but that is backed up, as I say, by, I think, when you talk to, for me, younger generation, their expectation is beyond where we are today. But it is definitely around this devices that do more for them now. And I don't know how we get there. I'm not sitting here and going, hey, the last 5 minutes is, you know, what's the simple answer, Pete? Because I don't know what the really simple answer is. And I'm sure you don't either, Tom. But, you know, but devices will get smarter and they will learn and be able to adapt so that they are probably more adaptable than they are now and probably realistically need less hands-on setting than they do now. Although there is always going to be a requirement for that. You know, if you want to get up in your, let's call it butler service, you know, if you want to get up later every Saturday than you do the rest of the week and that changes because of an event, that there's always going to be a manual intervention. You know, I don't think any device that we can imagine at the moment can preempt that. But I think you're right. There are certain devices and certain ways that the market's going to go that is going to allow much more intelligence in the market. But then we come back to only to new homes that have got the ability to be able to work all these devices, and how far down the line you go before it's open to everybody. And we can't get away from the privacy. What you were describing and what I've alluded to is a world where a big section of the, you know, of the market at the moment is worried about what that device is learning about you and what it's doing with it. Yeah. So we can want a world where it learns and can do everything for you, but who's using it and how are they using it?
So I think, having come full circle, that's a fantastic place to leave it. So thank you so much, Pete Gilbert from Romola Tech. We really appreciate your time today, and thank you very much.
Great, perfect.
And our thanks to Pete Gilbert for joining us this week. Just a reminder, if you work in the smart home or IoT industries and want to join us on a future episode, drop us an email, hello@beaconagency.co.uk. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening.